Success isn't accidental. It's the story you rewrite. The moment you stop living by the script others handed you, everything changes. I'm Raz Patel, and on The Raz Patel Show, we go past the polished personas and into the moments that shape us. We explore identity, reinvention, culture, courage, and the unscripted conversations that reveal how people rise, rebuild, and rediscover themselves. These aren't interviews, they're turning points. The kind that shift perspective and sometimes an entire path. When life reshapes you, when clarity breaks through, when boundaries shift, that's where the real journey begins. The Raz Patel Show, story rewritten, voices awakened, journeys redefined.
Welcome to The Raz Patel Show. I'm Raz Patel, and I don't do surface level. I do the moment that changed you. Today, we're talking about a topic that's everywhere, but rarely handled with both science and humanity. GLP-1, Medications and Sustainable Change. My guest is Anna Reisdorf, a registered dietitian and founder of GLP-1 Hub, where she translates complex GLP-1 guidance into practical, evidence-based steps people can actually live with. Anna, I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, yes, of course. This is a serious and important topic that I think needs to be addressed. What are your thoughts on just talking freely about the GLP-1 at the moment?
I think it's one of the most important topics of our time. It's AI and GLP-1. It's so much information to be discussed around this topic.
Absolutely. So Anna, let's get to it. When someone meets you today, what do you want them to understand about you before they hear registered dietitian or GLP-1?
Well, I'm a mom, I'm a business owner, I'm a serial entrepreneur at heart. So that's really who I am. I love living my life here in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yes. And, you know, but what, I guess I want to understand why GLP-1, what sparked you to talk about GLP-1? Why do you think it's important in today's topic?
I've been a registered dietitian for 20 years. I started working with people who are doing weight loss surgery and bariatrics. Mm-hmm. So they had to go through a 6-month program in preparation for the surgery. And I saw some people during that 6 months be incredibly successful. And I saw some people who were doing everything right and couldn't get the results that they were looking for, even with the surgery, still struggling with the obesity. So I kind of went away from that because I felt really helpless. I wanted to help those people. That's why I became a registered dietitian, is I wanted to help people live better, healthier lives. And I felt like I couldn't. So then I went to do other things, teach at the university. I worked as a writer for the last 10 years. And about 3 years ago, I personally started using GLP-1 medications in order to lose about 40 pounds that I was struggling to get off after having 2 children.
Wow. And I'm definitely going to get to that in more detail about that part, because it's so important that you're utilizing it on your own. But let's talk about, what's a belief you had about weight loss early in your career that you don't believe anymore? Other than, of course, which I'm going to touch base about your personal story, because I want the world to know who you really are from that aspect. But when it comes to your career, your people that you're supporting, your clients, what's changed it in terms of your belief system?
When I was working with bariatrics, I will be honest, I thought those food records that were perfect that my patients were turning in were lies. Mm. I thought they were lying. I thought there is no way that this is what they were eating and they couldn't lose weight. And that has changed completely. So draw me in
in terms of why you thought those were fabricated, and it was more of a disbelief from your end.
Because in
Is
school,
there something that sparked you from that, or a story or an event that sparked you from that?
In school, I learned calories in, calories out, right? You eat a healthy diet, perfect diet, a diet, like some of their diets were better than I could have designed as a dietitian. So why were they not losing weight? They were swearing.
Yeah, it just doesn't scientifically make sense. Yeah.
Right. I'm exercising. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Early in my career, I didn't understand the complexity of weight loss. And that's kind of, I felt so helpless. So I just backed away from doing that at all because I couldn't help. And I'm not going to call you a liar.
Right.
That's not fair. So I just went to a different area and I said, I can't help these people. I don't know what to do. And GLP-1 changed that because it allowed me to see that it is more complex. There is a significant hormone and brain issue going on here that could never be fixed by restricting your calories or exercising more.
Beautiful. So you started in bariatrics, Anna, and watched real transformation up close. What did those patients teach you about the gap between knowing and actually being able to do to help themselves?
I think it's just more sustainability. They knew what to do and could do it maybe for a short time. But our bodies work against that calorie deficit, right? So you can know I need to be in a calorie deficit and I need to, you know, exercise, but it was so difficult to keep that going long term. Mm. And while some of them were able to make very small changes, like I remember there was one patient who went from eating 2 burritos and drinking 2 liters of soda a day to just half that, 1 burrito and 3 2 liters of soda a day, and he lost like 30 pounds in a month, right? So to me, like that was what I thought, okay, well, everybody, all these people are just being excessive with their caloric intake, but that was like not the truth. But there were Absolutely. Many people who could do that, who could make more small change. I'm not gonna say that's a small change, it's a pretty big change, but who could make those types of changes and see success, whereas others were just continuously stuck.
Right. You've said you couldn't crack sustained weight loss for yourself until GLP-1 entered your life. What was the emotional turning point when you realized, oh, this is different for yourself?
For me, I think it was that I also needed to be exceptionally strict, exceptionally like rigorous with everything. And I was also, now I understand, dealing with some hormonal issues, which are, you know, worse as one grows into perimenopause. And I just would need to really, you know, track every calorie, do everything. And I already am a business owner. I'm a mom. I have a busy life. And that was just something that was not sustainable for me to do at such a rigorous level in order to maintain the weight that I would want to maintain. And GLP-1 made it so that I could still follow the healthy habits that I already had, but it just kind of helped improve the hormones, reduce the cravings, force me to sort of learn to manage the stress eating in a different way, because you just don't want to eat. You don't want to drink alcohol anymore. You don't want to like do all those things that make the weight difficult. So I was able to finally do the things correctly that I needed to do to help me get to the weight that I've always wanted to be.
Yeah. And you brought up in a key point about stress, because that's a huge factor in terms of triggering, whether it's emotional eating, whether it's able to have the mindset to stop yourself from indulging into these type of calorie intake that's not good for you. So that's a point taken, and I think we'll be touching more on that in the later episodes. So why did you create GLP-1 Hub? What did you see online that made you think people need a trustworthy bridge here?
What I started to see is my dietitian colleagues were slow to come on and start talking about this. Many of them, I think, felt that this was going to take their jobs away or that nobody was going to need them anymore. And so I started looking, who's talking about GLP-1 online? And it was users, just random users of GLP-1, which is fine. People can share their stories. But then I started listening to what some of them were saying, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is completely wrong. This is not correct at all. So I just thought, you know, I needed a new direction in my business. I had had a writing business, which declined because of AI over the last couple of years. I needed a new direction. And I already knew how to do writing, how to do content marketing, how to do, you know, how to build an online business, because I've been doing it for other people for many years. And I thought, this is it. And I had made a lot of mistakes, which we'll get into a little bit later. And I said, if I'm making mistakes, what are the people who know nothing about how this medication works, how weight loss works, how nutrition works? Like, what are they doing? So I just felt like there was a lot of space for a trustworthy person to come on and talk about the medications, how to use it to not lose as much weight as possible and then, you know, get osteoporosis and break your bones, but to use it to live the life that you really want. And so that's my vision for GLP-1.
Absolutely. And I'm thankful that you're bringing this to light for so many people who need this and have no avenue, as you're saying, the direction of how to start. So thank you for that. And I mean, it's dear to me for this topic just because, you and I are both in that health system where as a nutritionist and you as a dietitian, we see all walks of life. And like you said earlier, it's a mental struggle as well as a physical structure. And when you combine the two, it's disastrous if you don't have a set protocol to follow, a framework to follow. And this GLP-1 sort of supports you in that angle.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And it's meant to be a support tool to allow you to finally be able to let go of all that mental stuff, to get your hormones, your glucose, and your insulin more in balance so that you can finally do the things you've been wanting to do but have been held back from doing because of your physiology and your brain.
Wow. Thank you. Next, I'm going to ask the question everybody whispers, what no one tells you about GLP-1, especially once the hype wears off. Stay tuned. I'm back with Anna, and I want to get clear because there's science, there's social media, and then there's what people are actually living through. Anna, what's the biggest conception you hear from people before they start a GLP-1, the one that sets them up to fail emotionally?
I think there's a lot of misconceptions about GLP-1. The first one is that it's going to get you to a weight that you were in high school or some goal weight that you imagine, and you're going to be able to control that. So you're going to say, oh, I want to weigh 130 pounds and the medication is going to get you wherever you want to go. The expectation for this medication is that you will lose about 15 to 20% of your body weight, which if you start around 250 pounds, let's say, 20% is a 50 pound weight loss. So you may still very well be at 200 pounds, even if your dream weight is 130. So that's the first thing, is this medication isn't like designed to get you to some magical weight that you've, you know, put in your brain. You also can't control how much weight you're going to lose. So I see a lot of people, oh, I only lost 5 pounds this month. I'm failing. The medication is failing. I thought I was going to lose 20. Okay, so the expectation and a healthy rate of weight loss is 2 to maybe 8 pounds a month. And people go on social media and they see somebody, I lost 30 pounds this month. I lost this. I lost that. And compare themselves to those people and then feel disappointed that the medication isn't working for them.
Right.
So there's so much comparison going on and unrealistic expectations about what a healthy weight is. How much weight loss will lead to improved health, and then also like how quickly you should lose weight. And my recommendation is to lose as slowly as possible because that's how you will achieve long-term health, not as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. Yes. And like you said, there's no such thing as a magic pill. It supports your sustainability to get you on a certain level that will work with you and with your body. So well said. Now, what are the most common side effects you see people struggle with? And what do you want them to understand about what's normal versus call your clinician?
Sure. So it's mostly digestive side effects. Nausea, constipation is a big one. Those are the two main ones that I am seeing. And, you know, nausea, if it's so bad that you're vomiting all the time, you need to call your clinician. You should not be spending all day throwing up. If it's to a point where you can't eat anything because you're so nauseous. Typically what I see is the nausea is worse like the day or two after the shot, and then it tends to get better. So if you're really unable to eat due to nausea at all, you should call your clinician. And then constipation. Constipation can get very, very severe if you're not actively managing it by drinking enough water, eating enough fiber, and walking and moving your body, because that helps kind of pull things through. You may need some type of medication to manage that as well. And you should talk to your doctor. But if you are feeling very uncomfortable, you haven't gone to the bathroom for 3 to 5 days, you should definitely call your doctor because it can result in an impaction and you do not want to go that route.
Perfect. I want to talk about access without fear mongering. The FDA says semaglutide injection shortage was resolved. How did that shift the conversation you were having with your community?
There's a lot of issues around access due to the cost of the medication, right? The branded version made by Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly are very expensive. We do now have the oral semaglutide, which starts at just $149 a month, which is the lowest price we've seen for a branded version of the medication. And as more come out, I think the price will drop. There's probably 20 or 30 other GLP-1s in various levels of clinical trials right now. So I'm expecting it to go down. But there's just a lot of drama with the FDA and these compounding pharmacies and this and that. And so access has continued to be an issue. I don't feel it's resolved. There's a lot of companies trying to step in and fill some of those gaps with compounding. But I don't know where the future lies with that because FDA is doing all sorts of things and I can't predict their what they're going to do or what they're going to succeed at or if they're going to ban it completely. I can't see the future there.
Right. Makes sense. Compounding is confusing, as you said, and people are getting mixed messages. What's the safety conversation you wish every patient heard, especially around dosing errors and salt forms?
There is a lot because of the cost of the medication. There is a very, very vast, what they call the gray market. So there's compounded pharmacies that are 503A or 503B compounded pharmacies that are not FDA approved, but do have FDA and state oversight. I feel confident with people getting their medications from a 503A or a 503B compounding pharmacy. But there are people getting medications that are research grade or coming from other countries. And that's what we call like the gray market because it's not really legal. Research grade GLP-1 medications are for research and they are not tested for purity. They have no regulation of any kind. They have nothing. So all of this to me is a very significant safety concern. And it concerns me because if somebody dies or gets a severe issue from one of these, how is it going to impact those of us who are getting it from a more legitimate source? How is the FDA going to sell that out? Is it just going to say, no one gets it anymore because you guys messed it up? And then there's so much that people are using medications that haven't even gone through clinical trials yet. There's a very much more powerful GLP-1 coming down that's still in clinical trials and people are somehow getting it on this gray market. Like it is just the Wild West. And I really encourage people get it from a legitimate source, please. That is FDA, at least FDA oversight, because you're injecting something into your body. It's not worth it.
Yeah. It's not worth it because you don't know the side effects and you don't know the source where it came from if it's not FDA regulated. So 100% agree, being a pharmacy owner myself. So I caution that very much. So when weight loss slows, people panic, right? What's your plateau reframe so they don't spiral into extremes?
So plateaus are going to happen. Mm-hmm. You're not going to lose weight. I saw somebody say the other day, I didn't lose weight today. I'm like, you're not going to lose weight every day. You're not going to lose weight every week. You may go a month or so without losing anything. And so what I try to teach is take a look at why you think the weight might not be coming off. So sometimes people are struggling with energy. So they're what they call the NEAT, which is the non-exercise activity thermogenesis, is the amount of calories that you burn by just moving around like your day to day. Sometimes that goes down because you're tired. So you're inadvertently not moving as much. And that can cause a plateau. So did you stop moving so much? Did you not eat enough protein? You're really supposed to focus on the protein on this medication. Are you not eating enough protein? Are you maybe like doing more tastes and biting, like taking bites here or swinging by the candy jar at your colleague's desk? Like All of these things are things we need to think about, whereas people just immediately go to, I just need to eat less. I need to cut my calories. I need to do an hour of cardio. But like, it's really those small habits throughout the day that's going to push you towards those plateaus. So I like to make it a little bit more sustainable rather than immediately going to, I can't eat anymore, cut all the carbs, do an hour of running. You know, that's the only way. The stress of doing all of that is what's actually going to make the plateau last longer. Whereas if you think about it in a more like rational way, let me see what tiny habits I may not be doing that well on that I can change and maybe get this moving again. And always see a registered dietitian. I got to make that plug.
Right. Well said. Next, I'm going into the long game, protein, muscle, and how to lose weight without losing strength, because that's where the real sustainability lives. Stay tuned. I'm here with Anna, and now we're going practical. If someone is taking a GLP-1, I want them thinking beyond the scale. So Anna, people keep hearing eat more protein, but they don't know how to execute on a suppressed appetite. What are your go-to strategies when someone can only tolerate small amounts?
Right. So you always need to prioritize your protein at every meal and every snack. So when I'm planning my meals, I think, what is my protein? That's my very first thought. And even if it's a small amount, you want to start eating that first, because that will help you at least get some in. And if there's a day when you just can't eat anything, it's pretty cool now. There's so many protein options that are liquid. And I don't want people living on like liquid protein shakes. Like, that's not sustainable. But if you really can't eat, you can sip on a 25, 30 gram of protein shake that at least can help you. And now they even have clear proteins, like protein waters and things like that. That's not a way to live, but at least it's something. And then sometimes I will also recommend that people do smaller meals throughout the day. So smaller portions, if that works. You know, the six meals a day thing is not necessary. I like to tell people a minimum of three meals a day. You need to eat three times a day because you cannot get your calories in otherwise. But sometimes people feel better, able to eat a little bit more if they do smaller portions throughout the day. So it really just depends on what works for you. But what I really want to focus on is you need food. People seem to think like, this is a mistake that I made for the first time. Like, hunger didn't control my entire life. And so I would just get an iced coffee in the morning and just go. And at 2 o'clock, I would feel my blood sugar drop because I hadn't eaten all day and was just running on caffeine, you know? And so that is a big mistake that I think people are making, is they can finally not eat. And that feels a little powerful, like finally I'm in control of this, but they forget that you need to eat, and that will catch up eventually if you don't focus on eating your protein and other foods as well.
Absolutely, 100%. And the small portions is a huge takeaway, whether you are on GLP-1 or not, because as a natural habit, that's something you should do. The fist size, remember, the fist size small portions is the best option. So thank you for that. The STEP trials even tracked body composition in a DXA sub-study. Why does that matter for real people? And how do you explain the muscle conversation without fear?
Sure. So some of when you lose weight rapidly, you inevitably lose some muscle. And that is really one of the main like criticisms that I hear about this medication from a lot of other healthcare providers, is that the people who are losing are not eating enough protein, cutting their calories too low, losing muscle. I will say that this is another mistake that I personally made. I started seeing my arms get jiggly after a while. My kids were like, why does your arm look like
this? You lost muscle.
Yeah, I lost muscle because I was just having iced coffee. And so, you know, we really need to focus on that muscle, because what is going to happen if you lose the muscle is your metabolism is going to slow down permanently. You're going to lose function as you get older, because you do naturally lose muscle as you get older. So it's going to be harder for you to walk up the stairs when you're 80, because you're not going to have that muscle anymore. And then if for some reason you have to get off the medication due to cost, due to, you know, the compounds are maybe going away, I don't know, for whatever reason, you're going to gain that weight back like faster than you can blink because your metabolism is completely gone. So we really need to manage the muscle and take steps to keep the muscle that we have. So I was able, as I learned more through this whole process, I was able to put strength training back into my routine in a more structured way and really focus on the protein and stop just trying to not eat anymore. And I was able to get the muscle back. Now I got these nice muscles. So I'm proud that I was able to do that, but that needs to really—
You can tone your muscles. So that's the beauty about it, right?
Yes.
Yes. So what's your approach to strength training now that we're talking about it for someone who feels intimidated, deconditioned, or afraid they'll do it wrong?
There isn't anything to do wrong. I think the main thing that a lot of people do is they jump in too much too fast. They think they need to be a kind of muscle builder or bodybuilder. But really the recommendation is about 2 to 3 days a week for 20 or 30 minutes. It's not, you know, hours and hours and hours at the gym. If you truly feel intimidated, you can go to any gym and ask for a personal training consultation and see if you can work with somebody one-on-one, even one time, just to kind of help you get started. But I have people in my community who, when they first started, they couldn't barely move. So they started with cans, you know, cans in their house, like lifting, moving above their arms, like something, like walking to the mailbox, trying to do the smallest possible thing to then work up to be able to do more.
Well said. Let's talk digestion, Anna. Constipation and reflux come up a lot on GLP-1s, right? So what are the simplest, most realistic nutrition moves you've seen help people stay consistent?
Sure. So constipation is a really big issue, and it's hydration, because the GLP-1 reduces your sense of thirst. So you really need to be paying attention to how much water you're drinking. And then also the fiber. And the fiber is a little bit tricky because most Americans do not get nearly enough fiber. We're like, literally, that's one of our worst nutrients. And so then you think, okay, well, I need more fiber. So let me add as much fiber as humanly possible. And then you get more constipated because the fiber has not enough water and makes the constipation worse. You're like, oh, this doesn't work. So you want to add the fiber slowly, no more than 5 grams a day. Your goal is 25 grams for the day. That's kind of the minimum amount of fiber. You find fiber in primarily fruits and vegetables and then whole grains. So you want to be consistent with that fiber intake. So after I think of my protein, I always think, what is my fruit or my vegetable for this meal? That's my second thought every time, so I can be sure to get that fiber. And then walking really, really helps the constipation improve because the gravity pulls things through, kind of massages your digestive system as you're moving along. So those are the three things to help with the fiber. And then sometimes people might need a supplement. I like to go towards magnesium first, which can help move things along in a more, it's not so harsh as some laxatives that you can get from the doctor. But that's an important conversation to stay in communication about with your doctor, because it can turn bad and very uncomfortable very quickly.
Right, for sure. What's the mindset shift that turns I'm on a medication into I'm building a life, especially when motivation dips?
I think that the way I like to look at it is what is my vision for myself when I'm 80? So as an 80-year-old woman, where do I want to be? What do I want to be doing? And I want to be going all around the world, traveling, doing the things. So I want to carry my suitcase onto, you know, the cruise ship, onto the airplane, onto the wherever I need to go. So that's the vision that I have. And I say, what does that woman need today as a 46-year-old woman in order to be that? Right. And so that, like, it's obviously the weight, which helps improve my long-term health. So that hopefully reduce one's risk of chronic disease. And then making sure that I'm staying strong, staying mobile, you know, eating foods that are supporting my life, my digestion, and my well-being, and then managing stress and the sleep as well. So looking at yourself as a whole person and having a strong vision for what you want when you're an older person, so that you can take those steps today, not just how much can I weigh on this scale, you know, having right. a bigger vision than that.
Right, for sure. And I really liked your few points that I want to address that were well said, and it's key, is that you don't have to have a strength training to, you know, feel the effect, right? A natural walk, for example, I love walking. I do over 6 miles 4 times a week, and that helps me tremendously because it's all about two things. One, keeping your mind at peace. And two, it's about just the overall body effect, right? So it's like you mentioned, you don't have to have a strenuous exercise built into your schedule to feel the effect. So I love that takeaway. The other thing that I really enjoyed was that no matter what age you are, you can build this into your system and your daily life. So you can have the lifestyle that you're looking for. A lot of people, Anna, it seems like we touched a little bit on it, is stuck on the image, right? Where they feel that they need to look like the Hollywood or the Bollywood or Tollywood, whatever you want to call it. But they don't understand that image is one thing that is portrayed and it's a facade, but you have to understand your true body and your genetic makeup to help it. And GLP-1 tends to support you through that to give you that ability to reach your threshold. Am I on the right, correct route, or yes. did I miss
this? Yes. And I'd like to reframe the GLP-1 conversation, and this is what I try to do, around health and what is the vision, right? What it is, and I would love people to say, how do I feel my healthiest? How do I feel my best? And it is not eating as little as possible to sustain a small weight that you think will give you the image that you're looking
for. Right. Yeah.
It is doing those, having the energy to do that 6 mile walk that you want to do. If you don't eat, you're going to die on the second mile, yeah, right? Exactly. You can't get through it. So those, I want to like frame this as a way to find a healthy, balanced life where you feel your best, where you're able to do the things that make you happy and sustain you, which if you really truly think about it, is not being the tiniest person you can be. It is being right. the healthiest, most capable, most mentally well-balanced type of person you can be. So that's where I'd love the GLP-1s to take us as a society. But you know, it's a challenge.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I 100% agree on that. And I think also safety is a huge issue. Safety, not in just terms of utilizing GLP-1 the right method. It's more on safety as your body needs you for the long run. So shortening your intake or cheating yourself out of a meal is not the correct route or not sustainable route in the long run. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it. From that, I want to talk about identity maintenance and what success looks like when the medication isn't the headline anymore. Stay tuned. I'm back with Anna, and I want to land this where it matters: long-term success and self-trust. Anna, thank you so far. You've been amazing in terms of providing the insight. What does success mean to you when the weight loss phase ends? How do you measure health without turning life into a spreadsheet?
What I would love for everyone to have from this medication and from their journey is a feeling of freedom. That's what the medication has personally given me. I don't have to think anymore. What diet am I starting on Monday? What calorie am I tracking? What, you know, is this fitting my macros? Is it whatever? All of those things are gone. My brain is free to do so yes. many other more beautiful things in my life. And that's where I'd like everyone to get to a weight where they are healthy, able to move their bodies in the way that feels good for them. And they don't have to nitpick over every single thing that they are putting in their mouth or, you know, living in this constant fear. Like, just can finally let it go. It's such a gift every right. day to be able to do that.
Yeah, beautiful. What's the most overlooked risk in this space? The medication, the misinformation, or the way people talk to themselves while they're changing?
I think it's all, there's a lot of you know, problems in the space. You know, there's the access issue that we've discussed, and then people not maybe getting the medication from the best source or not being able to afford it. And then I think that just at the beginning, when people started using this medication, I really saw them thinking, oh my goodness, you know, I have all these medical conditions and it's helping me and I'm losing this weight that's been so hard. And now I see a shift. I see a shift where people are like, how low can I go? Mm. How skinny can I get? So that's a concern for me as well. And as people are on the medication long-term, we're also getting more and more research about people developing various forms of malnutrition, which we're not used to seeing anymore in our country, right? We were overnourished. Yeah. But now I saw a New York Post article last week that said some people are getting scurvy. Like, scurvy was a disease people got when they were traveling the ocean for months and didn't have a source of vitamin C. Like, you have to try to get scurvy. This is not a normal thing. So there's going to be fallout from people getting a prescription and see you later. There's going to be some fallout in a society level. And that's a concern. That's why I can't ever stop talking. I just have to keep going, keep educating the people to hopefully try to prevent some of that.
Yeah, for sure. You came from a content and business background, right? So what's your standard for evidence-based when the internet is moving faster than the research?
You know, all of it is just so hard to keep up on, you know? So I interview a lot of clinicians on my own podcast. And so their practical advice is part of how I judge the evidence. And then some of the things, you know, we have evidence for: protein is essential, weight loss causes, you know, muscle loss. So some of it can be applied in this situation. And then I try to stay up to date as much as I can and inform the audience as the new research comes out. But that's really one reason why many dietitians were afraid to jump in here, is because we didn't have a full body of evidence. And I said, we can't wait for that. The people need us now. We know you need micronutrients. We don't need to wait for a study to tell us that. We can say that today. So to me, I feel like we have enough information about at least the basics of nutrition, basics of how to lose weight in a sustainable way, that we can apply it to this. We don't need like a whole 20 years worth of evidence to start telling people to do the right thing.
Yeah, no, for sure. If someone is afraid of regaining, what's the one habit you want locked in before anything changes? Food, movement, sleep, or stress?
So on my podcast, I actually interviewed the two main weight maintenance researchers in the country. And they said food is the weight loss lever. Exercise is the weight maintenance lever. They have been researching weight maintenance for 40 years. And everyone they have studied that has kept the weight off does an hour to an hour and a half of exercise every day as consistently as they can. That is really the key to the maintenance.
Wow, that's impressive. If you could give one compassionate truth to the person who feels judged for using a GLP-1, what would you say so they leave shame behind and lead their own life?
I think there's a lot of people still feel shame because there is still a very strong narrative that your weight is your fault. Right. And you're responsible for it and you're not trying hard enough. And so we need to let go of that, in that some of it is not your fault. It is your hormones. It is your stress. It is your genetics. It is your chronic diseases you might be managing. It is a lot of different factors that you can't really control. And so letting go of that, because in thinking of GLP-1 medication as the same as you would for a diabetes medication or a blood pressure medication, you wouldn't feel shame if you had to take a blood pressure medication because your blood pressure was high, right? I mean, you don't need to tell everybody, but like, you wouldn't feel like that was some sort of moral failure on your part. So I think we need to reframe it as the same. It is a medication that is helping you manage a condition that you need support on. And so I would love for everybody to feel that way. But even on my channels, I get a lot of, you're a dietitian on a GLP-1. Like, you don't know anything. You should have tried harder. So there's still a big narrative like that for a lot of people. But I think as we normalize it, talk about it, people become braver to share their stories it will become more normalized.
Yeah, it becomes a comfort the more you talk about it. So 100% agree. Anna, where can people follow your work and learn more about GLP-1 Hub? And what's the best email for professional inquiries?
So I'm at GLP-1 Hub everywhere, YouTube, Instagram. My podcast is called GLP-1 Hub as well. And so it's on all the podcasting places. And you can email me hello at glp-1hub.com. I'm happy to answer any questions or speak to whoever about medications. There's a lot to say.
Well said. Thank you. And, Anna, thank you for being both grounded and brave today. I love conversations that tell the truth without taking away hope. To everyone watching, growth doesn't happen in comfort. It happens in the moments that test who you are and reveal who you're becoming. I'm Raz Patel, and this is The Raz Patel Show. Frozen to Fearless. I'll see you next time.